Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Different people are interested in different things and ask different questions. That simple, logical fact is just one of the reasons that increasing diversity in science is so important. And my next guest's research is a textbook example. Cindy Voisin is assistant professor of biology at Northeastern Illinois University. Cindy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Heather. Thank you for having me.
You grew up in Fort Kent, Maine. Can you tell us a little bit about your family and growing up in Maine?
So my parents, grandparents, and extended family are all from Fort Kent. It's a small little town at the top of Maine. On the Canadian border, it has a strong French influence. And the culture is Acadian. And people, my grandparents still speak French. My parents speak French. And my parents grew up there, stayed there. And I left home when I was 17 to go to college at Bates College. And often go back to visit my friends and family as often as I can.
When did you first think that you might be interested in biology or interested in science?
I was always interested in biology. The only career option I had considered growing up in Fort Kent was to become a medical doctor or an MD. That was the field that I had been exposed to for that would satisfy my interest in biology. But after my education at Bates College and a period of time at University of New Hampshire one summer doing research, I realized that biology had a lot of different components to it and opportunities besides just going into medicine.
So you mentioned Bates and then graduate school after that, where?
I went to University of Wisconsin at Madison.
And then back to the East Coast for a postdoc at Harvard. And then back to the Midwest, to Northwestern University, mm-hmm. all probably pretty familiar names here in New England. And then you moved, it's not even across town, it's just, it looks like a few blocks away, really, to Northeastern Illinois University. That's a pretty different setting, though. Tell us a little bit about that university and what drew you there.
So I had spent some time as an adjunct at Northeastern Illinois University while I was postdocing at Northwestern. And I was teaching a general biology course to non-majors. And the student population that I was interacting with was very different than the population that I was working with at Northwestern University. But what I found was that I really connected with the students that were at Northeastern. I identified with them in multiple ways, being a first-generation college student, coming from a low-income background, coming from a household that was bilingual. I felt like I had gone through this journey of higher education and completing a PhD, and I felt like I could provide some guidance for students at Northeastern that they may have not had access to at home, which is something that I had experienced myself.
So Northeastern Illinois University has a very large Latino and Hispanic mm-hmm. population. That's what you're saying with the first generation mm-hmm. going to college and mm-hmm. bilingual.
So Northeastern Illinois University is a state school. It's located in Chicago. And I would say that the demographics of the university reflect the population in Chicago. And so the student population consists of a lot of various minorities, different age demographics, students that come from a variety of different backgrounds, and it's an affordable education.
I'm talking with Cindy Voisin of Northeastern Illinois University. Most of your research involves these tiny little worms that scientists call C. elegans that really are a workhorse of many biology labs, but they're also one of those lab animals that, you know, people love to just kind of poke fun at. And why on earth would we study these little worms? What are we learning about humans or, you know, about anything in the real world when we study these little worms? So what do you learn? Why pick that animal to study?
So every model organism has its strengths and its limitations. And the best thing to try to do is exploit the strengths of the model system. And the reason why I like worms is because some of the questions that I'm interested in asking scientifically, the worms are good resources for this. For example, I'm interested in studying age-related neurodegenerative diseases.
And I mean, worms... I'm going to stop you right there because that seems like a really funny thing. If you're interested in humans getting older, to study this little tiny worm that lives, what, days, weeks, months?
3 weeks. About 3 weeks. And so, yes. And so that's an appeal to researchers, because an aging study takes 3 weeks in worms. And our worms do age. And what I like to tell people is, on the inside, we're very similar to worms on a cellular level. And the other thing to realize about worms is they have 959 cells in the adult hermaphrodite, and 302 of those are neurons. And so they have what we would say is a simple nervous system compared to humans, but they share a lot of similarities with us on the cellular level.
So, and then, for a third of their cells to be mm-hmm. nerve cells seems kind of disproportionate, isn't it?
It gives them a lot of behavioral responses, and they have to interact with their environment. So it seems appropriate to me that they would have a somewhat developed nervous system.
When we think about Alzheimer's and dementia, what would that actually look like in a worm?
So in a worm, for example, you can monitor the effect of different types of neurons. You can look at the role of motor neurons. So you can monitor the worm's movement and get an indication as to whether or not its normal movement is impaired. And a second type of neuronal function you can monitor is the ability for the worm to sense chemicals in its environment. So it's chemosensory response. And you can compare the function of a chemosensory neuron that is expressing a disease-related protein versus a normal healthy neuron, and see if it can respond to the chemical as well.
I'm talking with Cindy Voisin of Northeastern Illinois University. You've got a completely different project working to develop tools to diagnose HIV and tuberculosis in countries where there just aren't the resources to use the high-tech molecular or genetic tests that we might use in this country. Mm-hmm. How on earth do your little worms help with this?
Yeah, so this is a different collaboration that I have with a researcher at Northwestern University. And her research group at Northwestern develops diagnostic devices that can be used in clinics in sub-Saharan Africa. And the point of the diagnostic devices that they're developing is to be able to give a result within a timely fashion. And so in conversations with her, talking about these neurons in the worms that are able to detect small molecules, the chemosensory neurons, she asked me if I thought my worms would have the ability to sniff out maybe small molecules that are secreted from the tuberculosis bacterium.
So the worms would be able to basically smell the bacteria.
Exactly. Smell the small molecules that the bacteria secrete, because worms normally eat bacteria as a source of food. And tuberculosis secretes four specific odorants. So we bought the four odorants from a chemical company, and we basically presented them to our worms to see if they could detect them. And the response is either they're attracted, they go towards the odorant, or avoid it completely. And we can measure this. And what we found was that our worms were able to detect each one of the four chemicals individually. And so at this time, what we're trying to do is develop an assay to do the detection more efficiently and on a high throughput level. The long-term vision is that patients that would arrive in a clinic would expel their breath into a device. And in their breath, since tuberculosis resides in the lungs, the tuberculosis bacterium would secrete these odorants into the breath of the individual. The individual would breathe into the device that had the worms in it, and the worms would respond accordingly if there was a presence of the odorants released from the bacterium, the tuberculosis.
That is really amazing. With all of these different research tracks. I mean, just completely different research tracks going on in your lab.
Yes.
I have to wonder, what are your lab meeting discussions like?
Right. And so being at Northeastern Illinois University, which is primarily a teaching institution, we work with undergraduates and we have a master's degree program. But what this has allowed me is the flexibility to pursue a lot of different projects. And the projects that I'm selecting are the ones that appeal to the students that I'm serving. And I work with collaborators, as I've mentioned, at Northwestern and University of Illinois Chicago, who are leaders in their field. And so it's building projects with their help and their expertise that guide a lot of the work that we're able to do in our setting at Northeastern Illinois University. In addition to having this variety of projects, it also opens doors of opportunities for my undergraduate students to maybe go spend time in the labs at Northwestern, go spend time in the labs at University of Illinois at Chicago, and experience what it's like to be in that kind of academic lab setting.
There's definitely a social justice bent to the tuberculosis diagnosis work. Does that come up as a topic of conversation? That's not necessarily a focus of all mm-hmm. science labs.
Mm-hmm. I think for the students that gravitate towards those projects, I think they feel connected to them. A lot of them are underrepresented minorities, and it engages them in a way on the community level where they see they can impact the communities that they come from. It's not outright the conversation that we have during lab meetings, but I do notice that the students do feel a responsibility in the project that may be more than the responsibility of just the scientific aspect of it.
Cindy Voisin is assistant professor of biology at Northeastern Illinois University. Cindy, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.